Vanetics, with Gabriel of Urantia and Neon Emerson Chase, an ongoing series of lectures and teachings on spiritual leadership, personal change, and the principles of divine administration. Part of the curriculum of the University of Ascension Science and the Physics of Rebellion. More information can be found at uaspr.org. This episode is titled, Viewing Reality Through the Eyes of Redemption. The Fruits of the Spirit Give Spirit Vision. Here is Gabriel of Urantia.
Neon spoke about the word redeem. It's interesting how we correlate our teachings. And I never know exactly what she's going to say on the same topic. And so I could leave out a lot of the definitions of the word redeem. But the word redeem is very common in all of the religions, particularly, of course, Christianity and all of its sects and denominations. But two definitions: to save from a state of sinfulness and its consequences, to restore the honor, worth, or reputation of. In the Urantia book, there are only six references to the word redeem. On page 831, it says, concerning Adam and Eve, as we know Adam and Eve of the Urantia book, on the fourth day, Adam and Eve addressed the garden assembly. From the inaugural mount, they spoke to the people concerning the plans for the rehabilitation of the world and outlined the methods whereby they would seek to redeem the social culture of Urantia from the low levels to which it had fallen as a result of sin and rebellion. And that was 200,000 years ago. Just think how much it has fallen since then. Then I was surprised to find out that there was one about me in the Urantia book, where Jesus is talking to me as Peter. And it says on page 1744, knowing that the Pharisees were looking for them, they could not well go to Bethsaida to obtain money. When Peter told Jesus about the collector and that he had promised him the money, Jesus said, if you have promised, then you should pay. But wherewith will you redeem your promise? Will you again become a fisherman that you may honor your word? Many times we think we have to redeem a situation when we don't have to at all. Not in the will of God. And false or misplaced loyalties, you may think you have to redeem that situation, but not in the will of God. And that's what Jesus was saying to me 2,000 years ago. Would you become an unethical businessman or woman who succeeds out there in the third dimension from ripping off other people? Should you become any worldly position that does not help others to meet their God-given destinies? Well, the answer, of course, is no, you shouldn't. That is not rendering to Caesar what is Caesar's. That is not true honor. That is not true redemption. Does the commandment, honor your father and mother, does that mean that we obey their misconceptions? Does that mean we obey and follow their false views? Of course not. It doesn't. Do we honor our false employers, the greedy ones, with their false codes of ethics and greed? Do we? Of course not. We shouldn't. As a matter of fact, we should quit working for them. This is the major problem in the world, on this fallen planet called Urantia, Earth. False loyalties. False loyalties. We need to know what the battle is. We need to know, again, what the war is all about. We need to know if we're foot soldiers, the sergeants, lieutenants, privates, up the scale, we could become the generals of either Caligastia or Jesus Christ Michael. What is this reality on this planet all about? Why is the world in such a mess? Could we unknowingly be part of the problem and not part of the solution? Many, many, many good people are part of the problem. Good in the sense that they haven't realized that they're part of the problem. Many of the ways that they have learned and been taught to get and to be are not the ways of God. There's a German physicist who lived from 1901 to 1976 by the name of Heisenberg. And he was the founder of quantum mechanics. He won the 1932 Nobel Peace Prize for his uncertainty principle. What is the uncertainty principle? An uncertainty principle announced by German physicist Werner Heisenberg when he was 26 melds physics and philosophy together. He states that certain pairs of variables describing motion, velocity, and position, or energy and time, cannot be measured simultaneously with absolute accuracy because the measuring process itself interferes with the quantity to be measured. So while quantum mechanics provides valuable information, it is useful only within limits of tolerance, since no events can be described with zero tolerance. Continuing Fifth Epic of Revelation takes this principle even much further, stating that depending upon the spiritual ascension of the viewer who looks into the micro world, the micro world rearranges itself depending upon your spiritual ascension. No two scientists who look into a microscope see the same thing. Isn't that interesting? Thus, we have so many different views of physics and the molecular world. The atomic world is only visible to a minute degree through a gigantic microscope. I believe that's in Colorado, built. Could be a couple football fields long or something like that. To see those subatomic particles that angels can see with their eyes only. Why can angels see the true subatomic world when it takes three football fields long of a man-built microscope and they can hardly see even one atom? When what they should be able to see are millions of atoms circulating through that microscope, all in different patterns of order. Well, do you have 20/20 spirit vision? Do you discern your circumstantial realities and your everyday relationships with people correctly? Do you have spirit vision? Do you have 20/20 spirit vision? Think about that. We all want to live in a holy city, in a holy place, in a sacred area. But are you sacred? Are you perfect? Or anything from perfect? Contrary to the movie that says love never says you're sorry, that's a lie. Love says you're sorry over and over and over and over and over again. Don't believe what the movies tell you. Another definition of the New Jerusalem, Camelot, is an ideal community on earth. Aren't we trying to create that here, the ideal community on earth? It's not just an intentional community where people decide to live together and you do your thing, I'll do my thing, you have your religion, I have mine, you do this, you do that. That's what the earth is, and that's why everybody's trying to kill each other. I taught Paolo Solari when I sat next to him at Argonsanti at his birthday, and I had the opportunity to sit right next to him, so I was able to feed him a little bit. I said, you know, this place, you know, it's built for what, how many thousands of people? It was 10,000 people or something like that in a small area. I said, in my couple of years here in Prescott, there's only been a few dozen people who are able to stay here over any period of time. Why is that? He says, what do you mean? What are you talking about? This Italian. I said, well, just what I said. Why don't you have a lot of people staying here? He said, I don't know. I said, good, I'm going to tell you. I said, everyone has a different view of reality. They're frightened with each other. I said, I talk to your people often. We come out here, and every time we get into a conversation, we're fighting about religion. That's what they're doing here at your place. This is a non-denominational city, he said. I said, well, first of all, you don't have a city yet. You got about a dozen people living here. And if you ever wanted to be a city, there's a book here you have to study and learn and understand. It's called the Urantia Book. What's it after? I said, it's a book about higher epical revelation. It's a book about getting along with each other. It's a book about God's views of reality as opposed to man's views of reality. We need to approach each other in a sacred manner. Native Americans and indigenous peoples of some higher spirit ways understood this. And the tribes and their tribal relations with each other were very sacred. And the way they dealt with each other, grandmother, grandfather, honorable. They honored their elders. They honored each other. A great part of adult maturity is being patient with those in our lives that we daily interact with at home and in the workplace. How many of you feel that you need to work on your emotional life? Raise your hands. Good. So you see, I'm not just talking to you. I know you think I'm talking to you. I know you think that I wrote this sermon just for you. I know you do. But you see, raise your hands again. See? All of us are in the same war. Emotions are tied in with spirituality in all religions. You read about the same kind of redemption, dealing with our emotions. Also, morality, dealing with morality. And some religions have different views of what morality is, but basically it's pretty consistent. Pretty consistent. Not to lie, not to cheat, not to harm, to be kind. It's all the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, long-suffering, understanding. And it's all pretty consistent in all religions. So if you meet somebody who's truly following their religion, be it Hinduism, Buddhism, whatever it is, the Kabbalah, the teachings of Vedas, whatever it is, it's consistent. Dealing with the lower self and becoming and having godly virtues. The control and practice of your emotions and morality, what's it lead to? The sevenfold path of Buddhism, the nirvana of Hinduism, the sanctification of Christianity, and the sanctification of continuing fifth epical revelation leads to divineness. We know that there is a need for a divine new order. The first of the seven stages of light and life on Urantia. All relations are religions. Again, teach the redemptive process of discipline and self-control. You've all probably heard this before, that when you want patience, you get tribulation from God. and you say, oh, God, please give me patience. You find out that all these trials and tests come your way with other people, you know, and situations and circumstances. I know that for quite some time, you know, when I prayed for patience, I stopped praying for patience. you know, the word came to me, you know, from the Spirit of God, and later on very clearly from Paladin, that when you pray for patience, you need to practice discipline. Just like an instrument you're trying to learn. You know, you can't learn it unless you discipline yourself to sit down, go through the mistakes over and over and over again, making the mistakes. And then, despite the mistakes, forgive yourself, keep on trying to, you know, play that instrument. And sooner or later, what happens? Miraculously, by miracle, you stop making the mistakes on your instrument and you become a master at it. Better and better. Less mistakes. And if you don't keep on practicing, however, what happens? The mistakes come back. And so that's how it is with virtues. You have to keep on practicing to do the right thing, to have the self-control, to catch yourself. Each one of us, we're all guilty. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to humanity, because we all have to deal with it. And the wonderful thing is that you can overcome. You can overcome. And you can be perfect, as Jesus said, to be perfect, because if it wasn't possible, he wouldn't tell us to be perfect, if it wasn't possible. And so in my own life, in this time around, I keep on trying. But guess what? I'm still not perfect. This talk is for me. This talk is for me. Because in many situations in my life, when I wish I had more self-control, I find out that I have first blown it. And I have to have God's forgiveness. I have to ask my family's forgiveness. I had to ask Mariah's forgiveness the other day, you know, because I blow it. I absolutely, at moments, blow it. So you need to learn to practice the discipline of love, the discipline of patience, the discipline of understanding others, the discipline of peace. Peace isn't something that just happens overnight in the soul, particularly on this planet. It's something that's earned after many, 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 many years of practicing what I just said. Many years. And then, mysteriously, miraculously, a lot of things could come out at you all at once. All at once. And you still have this peace that passes all understanding within you. That's the wonderful gift of practicing these virtues. You cannot respond with the voice of self-attitude. You have to discern God's will in any situation, in any moment. Not your will. The key here, once again, the key to it all is humility, 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 humility at the moment. Whenever you get in there, all spiritual vision is lost. You have to discern God's will in any situation, in any moment, not your will. It takes a sacrifice of your pride, of your will. There's a good pride that we can have. That's an accomplishment of beautiful, rightful, God-given things and talents and abilities. Pride for your beautiful children and your family. Those kinds of prides are good. But the kinds of prides that are not good is in your self-will and you wanting to do things your way based upon your false perceptions of reality. And it's not an easy subject to teach because each one of you are different. Each one of you is so complicated. So complicated. The soul is a very, very, very complicated thing. Only God knows us so well. And as we live thousands of years, we begin to get a grasp of how to discern the soul. Some of you try to discern the soul based upon less experience. You get yourselves in a lot of trouble. Best to not to be so judgmental so quickly. Best to be very, very open-minded in your views of what's happening. That's wisdom. That's wisdom on any planet in time and space. When you're in doubt, then you don't go to someone who's younger than you. You don't go to someone who's less experienced than you in soul life. You go to an elder soul. On other planets of time and space, they know exactly what to do when they can't and don't understand. Even on this planet, in certain, again, Native American indigenous tribes, they go to the elders to help them discern, hey, what just happened between my two brothers and sisters or my sister and brother or whatever. They have enough respect for the elders to go to the elders. That's what all of you need to do for clarification. For those set into positions of authority to help you to understand, hey, what just happened? And if your pride gets in the way and you think, well, I know, I'm older than this person chronologically, you may very well be. But how long have you been practicing the spiritual disciplines? That's the question. Because if you haven't been practicing those spiritual disciplines for a long time, your perceptions will not be as clear as you think they are to what just happened. And it's the what just happens that causes the wars out there. It causes all the deaths to humanity and the sufferings. It's the what just happened. And how it's perceived by those in power and by those who are not in power. The conflicts based upon the perceptions of, hey, what just happened? Concerning sacrifice, Aldous Huxley said, there's only one effectively redemptive sacrifice. The sacrifice of self-will to make room for the knowledge of God. Only one sacrifice. Get that self-will out of the way. Now, I didn't say that. How many of you have heard of Aldous Huxley? Okay. He said it. He found out something. He found out something. He lived from 1894 to 1963. He was a British author. I believe he wrote also Brave New World. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Brave, Doors of Perception.
Yeah. Doors of Perception, Brave New World. That's right. Isn't that interesting? Doors of Perception. I just got it. He did find out something, didn't he? Woo! Got the shivers on that one. How beautiful. Over-control leads me to these tidbits of information. My fellow Americans. My fellow destiny reservists. My compadres. From the universes of Wolverine, Thanuvim, Avalon, and Nebadon. This planet, Urantia, needs you. Needs leaders who display the virtues and characters and wisdom of God. Spiritual leaders. Leaders of true perception. Your children's children are depending upon you, to reverse the tide of evil and dire misrepresentation of the true character of God on this planet. You need to be that true character of God. You, destiny reservists, have been chosen by the Universal Father and Michael of Nebadon to go through the fires of character purification. not to just run through that fire on tippy toes. So that when you get to the other side without burning your little feet. No. But to let that fire burn away, self-will. When they taught me that back in 1989 or whatever, first of all, I said, why continuing fifth epical revelation? Why not the sixth epical revelation? I don't want to be continuing. Doesn't sound like it's, you know, should be the sixth epical revelation. Gladden said in his really kind way, the continuing fifth epical revelation, Gabriel. That's it. You know what he does. So I guess that was it. The continuing. Couldn't talk him out of it. But you know, I have my own perceptions. And so did Neon. Poor Neon. But anyway, our self-will needs to really be burned away. Now, if you put your finger to just a little bit of fire, you know how it hurts. Imagine just throwing yourself in and staying in there for a little while in that fire. And it talks here, and Paladin mentioned the fires of purification. That self-will. I used to think I knew everything. When I studied the Bible for many, many years, I thought, hey, man, like I got it. You know, I really got it. And then there comes this very thick book of over 2,000 pages or whatever called the Urantia book. And I says, oh, my God, if it's true, I mean, I got to study all that now? You know? Then I finally got through the Urantia book, and what happens? I find myself not exactly quite complete yet. Because I thought maybe I had the feelings that I had past lives. And the Urantia teachings, as far as the study groups are concerned, that there is no past lives and everybody's a new soul. So here it goes again. Where is the truth? Where does it lie? You know, I ended up in a tent in the Superstition Mountains trying to find myself and my God again. That's where my perceptions at the moment took me. An intent in the Superstition Mountains, I had $26 left of my name. I was under the authority of someone. I won't mention his name, but I was under the authority of someone who I actually, in soul age, in many, many, many ways, was his elder. There were people there in that community at that time who I was their elder, but my perceptions yet needed to be purified. So God put me in this fire. It was a fire. Because basically, I was under the authority of people who may not have handled things the way I would have handled them, who made me do things that far were below my intelligence, wisdom, spiritual knowledge, and so on, to do every day. I basically chopped wood, put up deer fences, cleaned the garbage. All the grunt work is what I did. The little administration I did was not much at all. And for the 3 months that I was there in the winter, freezing my head off, having to get up in the middle of the frozen cold night and go to the bathroom outside, out of the nice sleeping bags that I had to get out of and go into the freezing snow. You guys know what that's like, right? Mm-hmm. I complained a lot to God because my self-will was not happy at all. But I didn't see at the time, and I didn't understand quite at the time, but I still, God had to work on my 20th century humility. I still had a lot of false views of how God was going to work out my destiny. I still was trying to tell God what to do. I still had my own plans. God had to show me, I'll put you in the teepee in the Superstition Mountains, and you won't have any power or any Dale authority. And you won't even know where your mixed meal is coming from until you get it right, Gabriel. And I had become Gabriel, and I had the Urantia book and everything else. What I didn't know that there wasn't any other religion out there. There wasn't any other truth out there. What I didn't know that God was going to make me an audio fusion material complex to bring the continuing fifth epoch of revelation to the world. That I didn't know. But God had to prepare me through the fire of humility in order to make me ready to be that vessel. And then one day, as I was chopping wood out there in the snow, as it was snowing on a beautiful snowy day, Paladin said, "Hey, Gabriel!" And he began to teach me. And then the midwares began to teach us, Neon and I. He called forth and said that Neon would be coming, and she did about 3 or so days later. It's all in the book. But I had to get my self-will out of the way. I had to forgive God for me not becoming a music star in Hollywood. I had to forgive God for not will freezing some record executive's mind to say, "Hey, Gabriel, I love your music. We're going to put it out there with all those spiritual words, make you a star just like it is. Don't have to change a word. Keep all that God and spiritual stuff in there." Because that's what I thought God was going to do. Why shouldn't God do that for me? I've been serving God all my life, adult life. I deserve a break, Lord. That was my attitude. That was my perceptions of my reality. God, you got to do this. And when he didn't do it, I was mad. Disappointed. Matter of fact, I was going to give up the Urantia book. I had called the Catholic abbot again in Holy Trinity Monastery in St. David's. And I was going back and considering being a priest. I wouldn't have lasted long, of course, but that's what I was saying. Again, the abbot said to me on the phone, "We knew you were coming back." Because I had took that Briggs test there and before, and it came out that I would either be a famous person, and my type, personality type, or I would be in a monastery, one or the other. What a paradox. Famous or in the monastery, you know, and they knew it. They knew it. So when I called and said I wanted to come back, they knew I didn't become famous yet. So they thought I was coming back to be a brother or a priest, which I thought I was. I ended up, however, being led to the Superstition Mountains. And what led me there? Turkey. I went to the co-op, and it wasn't a noble reason. I went to the co-op in Tempe, Arizona, around the university area. And I went into the co-op, and there was a sign on the bulletin board, and it said, "Thanksgiving Day Dinner." Didn't say turkey. It said, "Thanksgiving Day Dinner at Rivas Mountain School of Self-Reliance in the Superstition Mountains. Come one, come all." I said, "Ah, free turkey." It didn't say turkey. So when I got there, we met at this country store, and they drove us back 15 miles in these big trucks. And I left my 280ZX down parked by a ranch. And we gathered in a circle. And I meet the wonderful gang there, and we're praying, holding hands. Then we go and eat, and I'm getting, I can't wait to eat my turkey and gravy and mashed potatoes and stuffing and all that stuff, you know. What do we eat? Microbiotic food.
Tofu.
Words I can't even pronounce. What is it, Tempe?
Tempe.
I mean, like, all these words, I didn't want to know how to say it. You know what I mean? There it is before me. Once again, God humbling me. But I didn't know it at the time. I thought, started praying that night, Father, did I make a mistake coming here? I'm sorry. I know I should have headed to the Catholic Church right away. To the monastery. I thought you wanted me to follow the sign on the board. But now, God, I'm out here in this freezing tent. Eating microbiotic food.
Macro.
That's what I mean. Both. I don't want to learn how to say it. And I don't even know if I lived before. I don't know if the Rancho book's true. I don't know nothing. Except I still believe in you. That's where I was. I mean, down to not knowing anything except the fact that God is God. And I still believe that Jesus was the Son of God. And that was it. But everything else, I had doubts about everything. So, burning away the stuff within us that isn't true. In this life, God has led me along that path so that I know what you guys are going through. I can laugh about it sometimes. I can cry about it at others. But I know. I know because God has put me through it. Everything that you're going through, I've been through. So instantly, when God attaches me to you and what you're going through, boom, he puts in front of my reality what happened to me. That's why I could have compassion. That's why I can be so easily forgiven of whatever you do. Because I did the same dumb mistakes. I had to be purified in the same way in this life. Not as super mortal Van, but as Gabriel becoming. As Van becoming as I once was. As you are becoming your point of origin reconstruction of who you once were. And as you first and second light souls are becoming and growing in your ascension to the cosmic names that you have been given now. That is your challenge, to become world leaders. Not world leaders of the world global commons, but world leaders of the divine new order in which all of you are representatives of divinity. And I know that all of you can do it. I see it happening all the time. You that have remained from the beginning are here. You are changing, becoming more beautiful every time I look in your eyes. That is a happening. Thank you.
Vanetics with Gabriel of Urantia and Neon Emerson Chase, an ongoing series of lectures and teachings on spiritual leadership, personal change, and the principles of divine administration. Part of the curriculum of the University of Ascension Science and the Physics of Rebellion. More information can be found at uaspr.org.